Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Another great show again this morning with Ken and Reggie. Reggie and Alan Cawley of Cawley's Call podcast discussed all things League of Ireland. We had a really good gas action today. Declan Drake was on the phone chatting football. Sean Lane in studio giving us the latest on hurling. Reggie had a good long chat with sports journalist for Irish Independent and the Left Wing podcast, Will Slattery, all about rugby, all about the United Rugby Championship. And in golf, Reggie caught up with Irish amateur Deirdre Smith, chatted all about the LPGA and PGA Tour. We hope you enjoy all of that, and don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts, and tune in live every Saturday morning from 8:30 until 10 o'clock on Sunshine 106.8.
Good morning, Reg. How are you?
I'm great. It's a little bit damp over here this morning, but I've a busy weekend. Very busy weekend. I've got, let me see, how many matches have I got today? There's two matches today. So I think I'm in Greystones first and then Clontarf later. Clontarf again tomorrow. And then I have the Senior Cup final. I'm doing that game tomorrow with Blackrock taking on Gonzaga in the RDS for the Leinster Schools Cup final. So that should be a great match.
Excellent.
Busy weekend indeed. You're busy yourself. Last night was incredible.
Yeah. Oh, amazing. I mean, we've had a couple of matches. I mean, O'Sullivan beat Mark Williams 10-9 during the week to get into the semi-finals, and then making five centuries against Mark Williams. And he made five centuries again yesterday against Neil Robertson. But unfortunately, this time was Pip 10-9. I mean, it was one of the... I thought the Mark Williams match was one of the greatest 10-9s, best of 9-day matches I've seen. But I think this one had to top it. Just had the standard from both players. It's just incredible. And O'Sullivan still producing amazing snooker at the age of 46. Robertson, 40, but he just got the better of him. Robertson is playing superb this year, Reg. I mean, he's already won the Masters and two other events as well. He's in the final of this tour championship, which is the top eight on the 1 year list, and he'll be going into the world championships, I'm sure, as a big favourite. Chuck Trump was the favourite, but he lost early to Luca Brasel in this tournament. And the way Robertson is playing, it's going to be hard to see him get beat here and indeed at the world championship. You never know what's going to happen, but I mean, the way he's playing at the moment, I've never seen him play as well or as consistent, and particularly, you know, with the barrage of breaks that O'Sullivan threw him. Five centuries. He's the only player, actually, to have made five centuries in matches, back-to-back matches, in the history of the sport, which is quite incredible, you know?
Absolutely, it is, yeah. There was one point during that where it looked like Ronnie was going to take it. He was in there. He had a break, and it was a tough pot now, in fairness, on the black after his third red.
Yeah.
And it kind of just rattled the jaw a little bit and stayed. And that was it, basically. Then Robertson kind of took control from there.
Yeah, he won the match from there. I mean, Ronnie, it was a tough black he took down the red, but it was one that he was always going to take on, you know. But Robertson's first red was a red down the rail on the opposite side. And, you know, he put all his eggs in one basket, it dropped in, and he went on to win the match from the one visit. Yeah, an incredible finish. And, I mean, you know, we were really treated to some great matches already this week. And we're going to have another one today. Luca Brasel takes on John Higgins in the other semi-final. And the winner will play Neil Robertson tomorrow. But incredible week of snooker. And it sort of tees it up lovely for the World Championship as well, which starts on the 16th of April. So, yeah, so it's going to be a great championship, but this has been wonderful as well.
And who do you think will take it? I know Higgins probably would be the favourite going into the other semi-finals. What are your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I think it could be a close one. I mean, Luca Brasel beat Joe Trump quite convincingly, really, 10-5 or 10-6 in the end. Higgins came through 10-9 from 7-2 down, which was quite incredible. So, but I think just Higgins' experience over the longer matches should win. But then you never know. Luca Brasel beat him here in the... we had to play the Scottish Open in North Wales, would you believe? That's another story. But Luca Brasel beat him 10-9 or he beat him in the final here back in December, I think it was. So he'll be feeling confident, Luca Bissell. But I think Chud Higgins just has his experience might just shade it, you know. In fact, it was a great stat. I mean, we've already had, 23 centuries this week alone. In the four since the World Championship started, which is, of course, you know, the last 32 and lots more matches because we've only had, top eight here. There was the highest amount of breaks, century breaks in the World Championship in the first 17 years, I think, was only about 24, and we've already superseded that over this week alone, which is quite incredible.
Amazing.
So it just shows you the standard. It just shows you the stat, how much the standard has gone up over the years.
Absolutely. Off the table, there's bit of bad press for the sport, though. I saw Liang. Found guilty of assaulting a woman. Is it likely the World Snooker will take further sanctions?
Very good question. I mean, that only came to light yesterday, even though it happened almost a year ago. He was convicted in a court yesterday and fined and has got community sentence service for a year. Yeah, it happened in the city centre of Sheffield. He was caught on CCTV. It's a very unfortunate incident. And I'm not quite sure what World Snooker can do. They've been talking to the barristers about bringing the game into disrepute. Yeah. They should do something. I really hope they do. Any sort of domestic abuse or assault on a woman is absolutely disgraceful. And you know, World Snooker are very strong in that department with its members. And I hope they come down on Liang Wenbo, you know, for sure.
Yeah, well, we're waiting to see how that unfolds.
It's very unfortunate.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Changing direction then, seeing what you think of the World Cup draw. That's an interesting one. It is.
I mean, I think England got a great draw, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. Scotland,
Iran. They got a handy one. I think there's some good ones in there. I mean, Spain, Germany, Japan, that's a tough old group, you know. Qatar, Ecuador, Senegal, Netherlands. The Netherlands should come through. I know it's two to qualify. But still, Brazil have got a tough group, I think. Serbia, Switzerland and the Cameroon as well. I think that's a really good group. And Portugal is not too bad. Ghana, Uruguay, Korea Republic. So, I think of all the teams, I think England have got a good one. Argentina, I mean, they're in a pretty tough group. Mexico will pose a threat, and indeed Poland as well. So Saudi Arabia is the fourth team that make up there, you know. So I think some good groups there. I mean, I can't wait for it. I love the football.
Yeah,
it's I'm not too happy that it's being played in Qatar, to be honest, you know. And of course, it's causing havoc with a lot of other sports as well, because everything is has been put forward because of the World Cup.
Yeah.
And of course, it's going to start, I think, only a week after the Premiership sort of stalls for the bit during the time in November, December. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be completely different. It finishes, I think the World Cup final finishes on the 18th of December, a week before Christmas. So it's going to be quite unusual, but it's something to look forward to, you know?
Yeah, well, coming up to Christmas. It'll be honest before we know where we are, after all the talk and all the controversy with Qatar and COVID and postponements and everything else. It's funny, it's literally is just around the corner. And we haven't heard any England are going to win a talk yet, so that's all to come.
We have another
7 months of that to look forward to, so that's grand.
What else? I honestly think they have a good chance. You know, they've got a great squad of players. They've got a great squad of players. They came up short in the European Championships in the final against Italy, and no doubt they'll sort of get that experience. But I think they've got a great squad of players, and, you know, it wouldn't surprise me. We'll never hear the end of it, of course, you know. They keep bringing up 66. Yeah, they might bottle it in the semi-finals or penalties again, you know. But it should be interesting. It's something to look forward to, you know.
Absolutely. And I know you'll also be looking forward to, as I am, really looking forward to, and particularly looking forward to the three Irish in the Masters. I mean, this is probably the first Masters where there has been so little talk about McIlroy, which I think is going to serve him well. I know he didn't make the cut this weekend in Texas.
Yeah.
That's going to serve him well coming in quietly under the radar. There's no chat about him, and let's see what happens with that.
Yeah.
But I'm just so excited about Seamus Power and seeing where that goes. It's to be a great Masters, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Seamus Power must be so excited to be actually teeing it up there in the Masters, you know.
Yeah.
It's going to be brilliant for him. He deserves it. I mean, he's grafted hard. He's played really well over the last couple of years. And, you know, it'll be a great honour for him teeing it up. And you never know. I mean, he's been playing really consistently well over there. But I think you're right about McIlroy. I think the pressure of the heat off him, the attention, you know, but he's been very disappointing, Reg. I mean, another missed cut last night, you know. I don't know. I just hope he does it. I mean, he deserves it. He's got such an abundance of talent, and I think he deserves it. I mean, we all remember that time when he completely folded, you know, in the last round, and that was a very hard part. The brutality of sport, you know, when your confidence completely goes, you know.
Yeah.
And I know that too well myself. But yeah, I'd love to see him do it. I think he deserves a green jacket for sure, you know.
He does, but if he didn't, the other one, I'd absolutely delighted would be if Lowry could, you know. He's playing good
at the moment.
He's playing very, very good golf at the moment. It'd be amazing if he was to go on
and
do well in it and have us all screaming at the television again on the Sunday night. It'd be quite incredible to see that.
Well, he's a great shot maker, you know, and I think like Augusta, you know, with the twists and turns and the greens, he's a great putter, Shane Lowry. He's great at, you know, you get up and down. He's got a great touch around the greens, and I think it could suit him, you know. Mm. He'd be a great each way bet for sure, you know. And you know, he's a big time player. You know, he loves the big time. You know, he loves the big tournaments, and it wouldn't put it past me if he was if he gave it a good run. You know, so I'll be backing him each way. And anyway,
that's for sure. I'd say you can't wait for later today. Actually, when Liverpool go top of the league after they beat Watford, that'll be something you look forward to, won't it?
Yeah, it will be. Yeah, I'll never hear the end of it. I heard enough of these Scousers over the past year and a half. So I'll keep the phone off for that one, Reg. You know.
Yeah. Well, I think it'll be only for a short stint anyway, because City of they're away. Who are they playing? Burnley or Brentford or someone this afternoon?
They're playing Burnley. Yeah, Burnley. Yeah.
Get the job done, and we're sitting nice and quietly there in fourth place in the league. Though.
Oh, yeah, you've got a tough match, so. Yeah, you've got a tough match on Monday.
Yeah, that's all right.
Palace away.
They're all tough. Time to turn our attention to football now. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by the one and only Alan Cawley. Good morning, Al. How are you?
I'm good, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Very well. Looking forward to another great weekend of sport. There's loads happening. I enjoyed during the week as well, though, I have to be honest with you, sitting there glued to the TV. It was one of the strangest games. I had two young lads on the couch losing their mind. It's fixed. The referee is being paid. We're all sorts of accusations with all the offsides, and I was trying to explain to them, lads, listen, they were offside. You can see it in the replays. They were having none of it. What did we score? Four goals that were offside. But we got there in the end. What a match it was.
Yeah, it was very unusual, Reggie, to have four goals disallowed. But you're right, the referee was spot on.
Yeah.
Even without VAR, you could see clear as day when they did show the replay that they were all offside. But it was a tricky game coming off the back of, I suppose, the Belgium game, because everybody was so up for that and the hype around that. And of course, Belgium come to town and the quality that they possess. Sometimes it can be tricky then, especially playing against lesser opposition. But I'm sure Stephen Kenny wasn't best pleased with the performance, particularly in the first half. I just felt it was a little bit kind of pedestrian at times, Reggie. Second half, it did improve. And as you say, they disallowed goals and we did look a bit more of a goal threat. But of course, for Troy Parrott to pop up in the last kick of the game, really an unbelievable strike. And just for him alone, personally, I think it might be a kickstart to his career, because there was a lot of hype around him. He's only a young kid, probably unwarranted hype, to be fair, in the sense of the pressure that people were putting on him, because he was a very good underage player. But it's a total different kettle of fish when you're trying to transfer that at the senior level. And probably because of the situation we found ourselves in, with no ready-made replacement as such for Robbie Keane, we're pinning a lot of pressure on this young kid. And I'm glad that things have died down a little bit and he's back out now with MK Dons on loan and doing very well, and there's less hype. And the fact that he came on the other night and played well when he came on, then scored an absolute cracker, it might just kickstart his career in terms of the international scene as well. So I was delighted for him. But overall, it was a good window in the sense that good performance against Belgium, got the victory in the end against Lithuania, made some changes, fellas got game time. And the momentum carries on, Reggie.
Yeah, and it feels positive. It feels very positive around the Irish squad. Mm. And like, you know, I know from past experience in my own sport, it shouldn't be the case, but it is the case that it's harder to get up for games like that. You've got the big hype of the number one team in the world, like Belgium, albeit that they were playing probably their second string side. But you've got the big hype and build up of that 3 days previously, and then you got to try and build it up again for a team that you know in all likelihood you're going to beat. It just it's almost impossible to get that same level of hype around it. So I would have some sympathy to the team and the management on that. But I have to say, what struck me the most was what it actually meant to Stephen Kenny and the rest of the management when that goal did go in and they got the win. The way they were so excited and reacted to it. I mean, that said a lot to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is a real togetherness. I know Stephen speaks about this a lot, but there is a real togetherness and unity. You can get that. And that's not manufactured. The players are coming out after each match speaking about how good the camps have been and how well they're getting on and all this kind of stuff. That's all good and well, and that's good. You still need to get the results, but there is a genuine sense that they're all in it together and something is building, Reggie. I agree with you totally. You see them celebrating after. And that's what it means to Stephen. I know it's only Lithuania. Don't get me wrong and don't get carried away. And they were a poor outfit. Lithuania were poor. And it was very much after the Lord Mayor show, as you say, with the Belgium game. But still in all, you still have to get the results because the one thing in the early part of the campaign when the performances were quite good in the games and we weren't getting results, people were giving out about that as well. So the results do matter a lot, no matter who you're playing against. And that one was big for Stephen because as much as he's trying to put out what he's trying to do and everybody gets a sense of what he's trying to do now and we can all see that, you have to back it up with results, and particularly when you're playing lesser opposition. So it was important they got the victory. And I think overall, building up towards the Nations League campaign and the qualifiers to come after that as well, I think it bodes well where we're at the moment. And as you say, the team is gelling. There's some new young players coming through as well. And there's a nice mix and blend amongst the squad now. And I feel as though we're from a year on of, I suppose, a little bit of doom and gloom, we're in a far better position going into those Nations League games.
Yeah, okay. Back to the SSE Airtricity League. Things heating up nicely in that as well. And I think Derry City really laid down a bit of a marker last night. Late goal, albeit from Ekintunde at the 93rd minute, I think it was, when they got it. But a 2-1 victory over Bowes, a 3-point gap now with a game in hand. And that was a very, very crucial win for Derry last night.
Yeah, I was in Dalymount, Reggie, and they fell a goal behind and probably deservedly so because Bohemians in the first half were very, very good. And if you get a chance to look at the goal, Bohemians scored, for me, the goal of the season so far, a brilliant team goal. I'd say there was about four or five players involved, eight or nine passes, a brilliant move finished off by Liam Burton. And at half time, the Bowes faithful were over the moon because it was probably the best they've played all season. Second half, Derry came out. Bowes never really started in the second half. Derry did show a bit of a reaction, but they got a good equaliser themselves. And it looked like it was just going to peter out to a one-all draw. And then Ekintunde pops up with a late goal. And it's massive, as you say, in the context. I know we're only 7-8 games in, but scoring late goals like that, it's not the first time they've done it this season. I think it's the third or fourth at this stage already, Reggie. Mm. That bodes well for the season going forward as well. And sometimes people can say you're lucky, but I think it's more a fact of they're going right till the death. And obviously popping up with some late goals is going to be huge for them when as the season carries on. But just to keep them sitting top, because Shamrock Rovers had a good victory themselves away at the Finn Harps, it just keeps them nicely kind of ticking along, Derry, and a good start to the season. But it was a bad performance in the second half from Bohemians, and there's certainly a bit of doom and gloom around Dalymount at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, speaking of bad performances, after everything we discussed last week and how well they were going, we gave the kiss of death to Sligo, and they lost at home to Shelburne. And I know Shelburne are no slouches, but they're below them in the league, and Sligo will have to look at that as a bad defeat.
Yeah, especially coming off the start they've had, Reggie. They were unbeaten in their first six games. So to lose, as you say, to Shelburne, who were kind of hit and miss up to now when they lost in their last game 3-0 to Finn Harps, a bad result. Sligo would have fancied their chances. But by all accounts, Shelburne deserved the victory. They just edged it from what I've heard. And Sligo Rovers didn't play well at all on the night. Almost a case of feeling as though they just had to turn up. and they came unstuck, and it was a great victory, especially on the road for Shelburne, and they're sitting nicely at mid-table. I think that's exactly kind of the most realistic place for them, Reggie, this year, because as we mentioned two or three times already on the show this year, it's relatively, like, it's basically a new squad that Damien Duff has brought in. So it was always going to take time for them to gel. I just think they have to establish themselves back in the league and build on that, and then maybe look further up the table in terms of Europe or what they can achieve. But that was a big result for them last night.
Yeah, St. Pat's will be disappointed as well. You know, they're sitting well on the table and they could only manage a 1-1 draw with Drogheda, who would be well below them in the table. So at home, with all the support that the Pat's fans have, again, they'll look at that as points that got away.
Yeah, they will, because at home, as you say, Reggie, if they have aspirations and maybe challenge Shamrock Rovers, you have to be beating the likes of Drogheda. But Drogheda themselves have done okay at the start. They were missing a couple of players in the early games, but since then they've picked up, and they had a great win in their last match against their nearest rivals, Dundalk, and played very well. So that'll be a great result for them in the road. I know they're winning 1-0 for a long time and they may be disappointed to concede, but I'd say Kevin Doherty would have taken that before the start of the night, so he'll be delighted, Kevin. Obviously, Tim Clancy will be disappointed, and going up against his old club as well, he might have been looking to get one over on them. But I think it's a really good point for Drogheda.
Okay. The World Cup draw happened, so we finally get to see what way it's all going to line out. It's kind of, it was pretty kind to England. I was talking to Ken about it earlier on. I suppose one of the most interesting groups would be the Spain-Germany group. That's and with Japan in there and Costa Rica or New Zealand, it's an interesting group. But overall, what were your thoughts on the draw?
Yeah, England definitely, Reggie. I don't know who's looking after them with these draws, but they certainly, at the moment, they're getting the rub of the green when it comes to them, and they will definitely fancy their chances. They'll come out of that group. Now, what will make it interesting is that playoff, and we know the result of that, and obviously Scotland have to play Ukraine if that goes ahead, and the winner plays Wales. So if Wales or Scotland were to get through and end up in England's group, we'd certainly have a tasty fixture in whoever they play. So that would kind of add to the group a little bit, because at the moment you should fancy England to get through that. The one that stuck out for me was Brazil, Serbia, yeah, and Switzerland. I think, yeah, that's the toughest group, Reggie.
And Cameroon,
that's a serious
as well
group. And Cameroon, yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that's going to be, like, I know people speak about every kind of draw, there's a group of death. For me, that's the trickiest, because Brazil, Serbia were obviously in our group trying to qualify and were the best team, beating, obviously qualifying ahead of us in Portugal as well. So Serbia are very, very good. And Switzerland have been very good in the last 2-3 years as well in the tournament. So I think that's a tricky one for Brazil. They won't have liked that. And Cameroon thrown into the mix, who were very much an unknown. I know they didn't do great in the African Nations, but they'll be tricky on any given day. So I think that's the toughest group out of them all. But you would fancy, the way most of the groups are, that the heavy hitters from Europe will come through them.
Yeah, absolutely. Across the water then, we have an early kickoff today for the Liverpool game. I don't know, Watford are a funny sort of a side. You're kind of thinking, they won't, like, Liverpool won't have any problem with them, and I don't think they will, but they're a funny sort of a side, Watford. But anyway, look, that, leaving that aside, a great chance for Liverpool to go back to the top of the table, albeit only for a few hours, because, I mean, City are away to Burnley and they'll most likely take care of them.
Yeah, but psychologically, Reggie, I think it's the first time Liverpool will go top if they win in months, because obviously City were on top for so long and almost looking like they were going to run away with it, and now Liverpool have clawed them back and they do have the opportunity to jump ahead of them for the first time, as I say, in months. So psychologically, that could be a big blow to Man City. I know they're only playing Burnley, but you know yourself, when obviously they look at the morning fixture, if Liverpool do win, and they'll find themselves 2 points behind and a bit of pressure on them. Now, they should take care of Burnley, but Burnley are obviously fighting for to stay up themselves, so that won't be easy, you would think. But in recent times, Man City have absolutely annihilated Burnley in the games, beating them 4-5 on most occasions. So I just think, though, maybe the break might have hampered Liverpool a little bit, because obviously all the players away on international duty, and they really were building up ahead of steam before that. Now, they still should pick up where they left off against Watford, but I'm sure Jurgen Klopp probably would have wanted to avoid that little break and just carry on the way things were going, because, as I say, they were really building up ahead of steam. But with 9 games to go, it definitely makes it so interesting for us, and we should have an unbelievable title running now with those two obviously going head to head, and they're obviously going to face off in the FA Cup, and there's a chance they could face off in the Champions League as well. So I think we have a few brilliant games ahead of us, Reggie, as we get into the latter end of the season now in the business end.
Absolutely. And as I said to Ken earlier, nice and quietly, Arsenal have slipped into fourth position. Not too bad.
Yeah, and Arteta manager of the month as well, Reggie. Yeah. I don't know if that's putting the mockers on him, but he certainly turned things round. We've had many conversations about him, and I felt the jury was still out a little bit, but I have to give him credit this year now, ever since Christmas, really, as well. And he's done very well. I thought it was a brave decision, the right decision as well, to get rid of Aubameyang. I know he's doing quite well since he's gone to Barcelona, but if you've one kind of player who's disrupting things there, you can't have that. And obviously that was the case with Aubameyang, and I thought that was a really strong decision from Arteta as well to get rid of him, and the right one. And since then, he's obviously done very well. The young players coming in, Saka, Smith Rowe, it looks as though he's found a bit of a partnership centre-half where they did have issues as well with Gabriel and Ben White. Obviously, Partey and Xhaka sitting in front of them as well, and they have a far better shape about them now when you look at Arsenal. And they're dangerous. Martinelli has been great for them as well in recent weeks. So for the first time in a long time, I'm kind of looking at Arsenal thinking they have the makings of doing something here now, you know.
It's time to turn our attention to GAA now. Delighted to be joined on the line by Declan Drake. Good morning, Declan. How are you?
Very well, Reg. How are you this morning?
Very well as well. I didn't think you'd be very well now, I have to say, after everything that's gone on. It's been a bit of a tough year so far for the Dubs, and it didn't get any better last Sunday. Agonising single point defeat in Monaghan in a game that everybody thought they would get done, and they didn't. That's the bottom line of it. And it has been a really poor league campaign. We've got to call it as it is, and of course getting relegated. But where has, you know, has this been on the cards for some time, or, you know, where's this squad at?
Yeah, I think it dawned inevitably, Red, after the defeat to Kildare and Newbridge, which was our fourth game of the campaign. We were pointless at that particular stage. We had three games remaining, all against Ulster opposition, two of them away from home, Tyrone, the All-Ireland champions, and Monaghan last Sunday in Clonus. Now, in fairness to the group, they went up to Clonus and got the result against Tyrone, and they followed it up with the win over Donegal and Croke Park. So they were going to Clonus with a certain degree of confidence last week. Yes, it was still going to be a tall order to achieve the victory and maintain the Division 1 status. And they came oh so close to it in the end. But the amazing thing I was reading during the week was that it's the second year in a row that Monaghan have survived on the last day. They did it against Galway last year and, of course, us last Sunday. But in injury time in both games, they were being relegated. And then by the time the full-time whistle had gone in the game, they stayed up. So it's small margins in situations like that. But yeah, it has been a very poor league campaign for Dublin, absolutely no doubt about that. First time since 2008 we've been relegated. And this time next year, we're talking about trips to maybe Cork, Meath, Louth, and even Limerick in Division 2 of the National League. So that'll be an interesting year next year. But look, there's no hiding it. It has been a very disappointing year so far. We now have to regroup, go away, and take whatever positives we can from this campaign and start preparing for the Championship game in roughly a month's time.
And funny enough, talking to people who know a bit about the game during the week, the attitude was, look, it hasn't been a good league, but don't write the Dubs off yet. League Championship opener in a month's time, things will be different by then. Do you feel that kind of positivity as well? Do you think that there are players there waiting in the wings that can come in, that can make the difference, and that the management will make the changes that are necessary?
Well, I think looking at the squad from what we had in the league to what it will be in a month's time in the Championship, I think April the 30th is our first Championship game. I think the only real notable addition to come back may be Conor Callaghan. The cooler clubman has missed all the entire league campaign due to injury. Now, I understand that he's making reasonable to good progress at the moment in his recovery, and Desi Farrell did say after the game at Clonus last Sunday that he would be available to the footballers this year. Now, there had been a lot of speculation floating around the city and county over the last number of months about his intentions for this year, and stories I was hearing from different people was that he was going to go and play hurling this year, but that seems to have been knocked on the head, and there's no doubt that the addition of Conor Collin to the squad will be a welcome one and badly needed as well. We're fortunate that we've had the likes of Mick Fitzsimons, his cooler clubmate, stay on. Johnny Cooper stayed on. James McCarthy tellingly so as well, the Ballymun man. But to have Conn back in the squad would add something to it as well. Amongst the championship, there's a few players probably on the fringes that we may not have seen or heard too much of over the last number of months, who I have no doubt may be called into training camps and that kind of thing over the next few weeks to see how they go. So you might see perhaps the likes of Kieran Archer maybe added to the panel and one or two others, but they can go away now quietly, go about their business and prepare for it. It's a championship like no other. For the first time since 2014, we're not the champions going into the All-Ireland Series. The pressure is on Tyrone, the pressure is on Kerry, of course there's always pressure on Dublin as well, but they're not the number one team to be hunted down this year, so it's a different perspective to approach it from. I'm a half glass full kind of merchant, I think, to be honest with you, and I think we'll have a reasonable championship campaign. I don't think we were strong enough to win it overall. I think most people would agree with that. But it's just interesting to see how far the journey can take us this year.
Okay, well, look, the Division 1 League final is on tomorrow at Croke Park, and it's Kerry taking on Mayo in what should be an absolute cracker of a game. Kerry, in my mind, will be the favourites, but may always have something to say about that. What way do you see it unfolding?
Yeah, I think it'll be an interesting game, all right. I think there is pressure on Kerry to deliver a national title in Croke Park and for their golden generation to start to really deliver on their promise the same way that we did over the last 10 years ourselves. Jack O'Connor has come back in as manager, has got them back into a league final. They're going fairly well. Mayo, back in Croke Park once again. Of course, they have been back since the All-Ireland reversal last year when they beat Dublin in the National League. So they'll be come up very determined themselves to get the right results. So it'll be an interesting game between these two teams. They are the best two teams in the league, and it'll be interesting to see how it pans out. My preference would be, or I think rather, not preference necessarily, but I think that Kerry will probably come through by a couple of points tomorrow.
Okay, very good. Okay, finally, Dick, the minor footballers, they're back in championship action this afternoon. Who have they got?
They're playing Leash, Reg, this afternoon. The game's in Parnell Park at 2 o'clock. They'll be looking to make it two wins from two. They did a very good win over Louth the last time out away from home. Home advantage this afternoon, so they'll be determined to make the most of that. So again, a good bunch of young lads there, working hard on their game and looking for championship glory. So we wish them every success there from 2 o'clock this afternoon against Leash.
Excellent stuff. Okay, Declan, as always, real pleasure chatting to you, and we'll catch up with you again next week.
Okay, take care, Reg.
Take care. That's Declan Drake there covering the football for us. And huge game coming up tomorrow with Kerry taking on Cork. But, Kerry taking on Mayo, I should say. But in Temple Stadium tonight, Cork are taking on Waterford to decide the Division 1 League Hurling League title from 7:15. I'm delighted to be joined in studio by Sean Lane. Sean, starting with Cork, they've started. Recovered really well from last year's All-Ireland final going through the league. They only lost a game against Wexford, and some would say that one didn't really matter because, it was just a bit of a dead rubber. But how has Kieran Kingston managed to turn this Cork side around?
Yeah, looking at Cork, they definitely last year's final against Limerick is one they'll really, really want to forget. They had a great win in the semi-final over Kilkenny, to get there. But, I suppose the one thing that Kieran Kingston has to be happy with, that, over the last maybe 5-7 years, there's been almost a total reliance on Patrick Horgan up front. But Cork now have Conor Lahan, Alan Connolly, Kieran Kingston, Robbie O'Flynn. They've some tremendous forwards. And even the last day, if you look at the Cork setup, Jack O'Connor, you might remember in the semi-final last year against Kilkenny, must have ran 80 yards to score a goal against Kilkenny. Himself and Seamus Harnedy, they both started on the bench. So he definitely has developed a bigger panel. I still think he's a bit of work to do, Reggie, on the back line, particularly the full back line, but he will be happy going into it. He's had a very good league campaign. He's in a final, and he has a huge match then in 2 weeks' time. They're at home to Limerick in the first round of the Munster Championship.
Yeah, well, that is the big one, of course. Limerick being the big rivals and all the success that they've had of late. And how do they compare to Limerick when you look at the two sides? Because we know the progress Limerick have made. Do you feel Cork have caught back up again?
There's no doubt. And everything in life, I think Cork have, you know, driven on that an extra 100 yards. But you know, the jury's out on Limerick. I mean, their league form would suggest they've come back. But, you know, league form, Reggie, as you know, and championship form are two different things. But in that game, I would expect that to be close. But Cork definitely have improved a hell of a lot. And I think they're going to give everything to try and win this game tonight.
And then you look at Waterford, their opponents. They got the job done, edging out Dublin and they did lose the final game to Kilkenny, let's say, but their semi-final win over Wexford, I mean, they were rampant that day, 5 goals. And Wexford are a decent side, you know, so it was a big performance and it was a big statement from Waterford.
Oh, absolutely, and everything that could have gone right on the day went right. I mean, the forward line that Waterford had that day was incredible. Now, I know they're missing Austin Gleeson the next day, but I mean, to put up 5-20 against a team that was unbeaten, remember Wexford did beat Cork on the other side, it's a formidable performance. And do you know, Waterford, along with Cork, have come a long, long way over the last couple of years. They're certainly, leaving Limerick aside for the moment, they're definitely the two form teams. They, you know, years ago the half forward line used to attack the backs, but now the Limerick are the Waterford and the Cork cornerbacks are attacking the corner forwards. They're running from everywhere, so it's going to be an intriguing game. I think there'll be high presses for short puckouts on both sides, there'll be interceptions, there'll be huge excitement, but it'll be very hard to call it.
Well, I'm going to get you to call it. Come on, you have to. That's why you're here. I mean, it's going to be tight, but who do you think the small advantage lies with?
Well, I suppose I haven't got the Cork team yet, but I had a look there and the Waterford team is up. I mean, they're missing Austin Gleeson, and we can talk about that in a second, but Conor Prunty, the all-star fullback, is back for Éireann Daly. Callum Lyons comes in for Austin Gleeson, and Stephen Bennett also starts. So they're three tremendous assets that Waterford have. I haven't got the Cork team, but I would say the manager's son will be under a small bit of pressure, because young Harnedy will probably to start as well. So taking everything into consideration, if I was to look at from a Waterford perspective, Cork were probably by far the better team against Kilkenny the last day, but even with 8 minutes to go, Reggie, they were still a point down. They only got a goal, a very, very late goal, a marvellous goal by Dara Fitzgibbon, but they ran the goal in. I think that the way Waterford played, you know, they've tied the Burka back now, you know, at centre back, playing in his role. They've young Prunty, who's the all-star, in behind him. I just think they're a tighter unit as a backline Waterford are, and I think the one ingredient, if Waterford can hold Cork from at max getting one goal, and importantly if they got none, I can see Waterford getting over the line here.
Interesting. You mentioned to me before the show, we were having a chat before about things that needed to change, and you had a few notes on that. What were you?
Yeah, I remember I was in here with you about a year and a half. It was the year that the All-Ireland final was Limerick and Waterford. It was in December, and you asked me how could Waterford win the game, and I think I listed off 8 things where they had to keep Limerick scoreless, they had to win their own puckouts, etc. But I honestly think Waterford have come so far that there's not an awful lot that they have to do, certainly to keep and try and Cork not to score a goal and push up on their short game and try and intercept them. I think the Austin Gleeson thing is definitely a small bit of impetuousness, if you look at it. I mean, it was a silly thing to do. But I think the whole Waterford squad will learn from this. They didn't appeal it, so obviously there's a high level of discipline in the panel, and you know, maybe over the duration of the whole season, that, you know, the loss of them for this match may be a benefit going forward.
Okay, fair enough. Finally, you watched the Dublin Miners losing in a high-scoring match against Wexford last Saturday in the Leinster Championship openers. What did you make of that in Parnell Park?
Well, of course, it was a great day. The sun was shining, and
it's always good.
I was over there with my daughter, but it was a great game. 3-20 to Wexford, 2-22 to Dublin. But I have to say, over the course of the hour, that Wexford were by far the better team. They were 5 or 6 points better. I saw a young lad playing there for Wexford, Simon Roach from Eldert and Abella. He's one to watch. He's a fantastic young lad. He could hurl everywhere. But Dublin struggled on their own puck out the first half and went 1-12 to 5 points down. Had they not done that, you know, they could have pulled it, you know, the game out of the fire, because the two inside forwards Dublin had was young Conor Brennan. He's a son of Shiner Brennan, who played with Kilkenny and also played with Dublin, and Conor Newman of the Crave Club. They got late ball in and got great scores inside, but you know, if Dublin can change a few things, they have Kilkenny next, you know, they might get a semi-final spot. But I suppose you'd have to suggest, if they lose Kilkenny away in Kilkenny, that they'll drop back into a quarter final.
Time to turn our attention to rugby now, and a big, big weekend of rugby as it happens. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Irish Independent journalist and left wing podcaster Will Slattery. Good morning, Will. How are you?
Good, thanks, Reggie. How are you?
Very well. Very well indeed. Nice, busy weekend ahead of us, and a lovely derby to look forward to finish off the evening this evening. We'll get to that. But first of all, I have to talk to you about the women's team. And disappointment is the only way I can describe last week's performance. Certainly below the level that would have expected from them. We spoke beforehand about the fact that Wales have now contracted 12 players who are full-time professionals, and what difference would that make to the Welsh setup and to the game as they played it? And as it turned out, a lot of difference.
Yeah, certainly as the game wore on the second half, Wales did seem to get stronger, and I think maybe the flip side of Ireland definitely did seem to wilt as the game went on, certainly in the final quarter. Like, Ireland had, I think, a 2-score lead approaching the hour mark and ended up losing by 2 scores, which says how much the game really swung in that last 20. Obviously, the problems at the set piece, I'm sure anyone who watched the game would be pretty well aware of. You know, that's a massive gap they're going to have to try to bridge against a really tough physical French team today. You know, yeah, it was disappointing. You know, the skill level was good. The endeavour was good. Like, some of the offloading for the tries was really nice. You know, I mentioned last weekend the halfbacks were very inexperienced, how they managed the game. I think they struggled a little bit at times, so it's a big step up for them today against France. And you would worry for them today. You know, interestingly, Greg McWilliams is going with the exact same team as last week, so Pavan Parsons is still being kept in reserve. His reasoning was that he didn't want to kind of, drop one player after one game. He wanted to maybe give them a chance to rectify it. It sounds good, but at the same time, when your best player is sitting on the bench and you have a really important, tough game away to a massive team, like, surely you need to bring your best player back in, but that's the decision he's made.
And it is a strange one, and it's kind of got a lot of people scratching heads about it. You're wondering if it's a case of trying not to be knee-jerk in his reaction, but, it is a strange one. But, I mean, that's not, you know, the only issue. I mean, if you suffer a defeat like that, it is often good to mix things up a little bit, and maybe, like you said, maybe there's options at halfback, maybe there's options at hooker, maybe there's other things that could have been done, because this is a very, very tough one they're facing against France. And if they go down to a bad defeat away from home, well, straight away it gets tongues wagging.
Yeah, exactly. And I suppose it's a funny one, because the reaction to last weekend's defeat was actually pretty positive. Yeah. Probably maybe too positive, reading the coverage. Like, some of the articles I read were, like, extremely effusive, as if they'd gone and they'd kicked on and won with a bonus point. Like, you have to remember, Ireland were 16-point favourites in the bookies to win that game. They lost by, I think, 9 in the end, or by 2 scores, certainly. So, I suppose, today, to be fair, they're 28-point underdogs. They're against a team that are much more, well-seasoned and professional than they are. So no one is expecting a whole pile. But if they go out and there's no real green shoots, and then you have to remember that at the end of the campaign, they're losing some of their sevens players for that Scotland game to finish things off. So they won't even have some of the key players in the team at the moment. So you are looking at maybe into a very, very tough campaign with maybe one win at most, because England are still on the slate. And then you're thinking about maybe just you're kind of playing for positives, which is not a situation where you want to be. Greg McWilliams has said he's not focusing on results, but if they are quite heavy defeats between now and the end of the campaign, it'll be a disappointing start to the reign. But I do think people, as you saw from the tone of the coverage, are willing to give the team a bit of rope, considering where they've coming from and, you know, all the off-field stuff that's going on. So it is a bit of a strange campaign in many ways in that regard.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, you can look at it that way and say that they're building for the future, and that's fair enough. I think that's fine, and provided they're going to be given the time to do that. But it's a funny thing, Will. You've seen it. I've seen it myself for so many years. It can be all the talk in the world about giving coaches time, players time and development time, but when it comes down and results are going the wrong way, that time runs out an awful lot quicker than it should normally, you know? So that's going to be interesting.
One comparison I'd make, you'll probably notice as well, like when Warren Gatland first came in as Ireland head coach, midway through a Five Nations campaign, there was a lot of kind of rebuilding to do then, and the results were tough at the start. It did take a couple of campaigns to kind of bed in some new players, bring in some younger players, and then eventually, I know he didn't kind of stay around long enough to see some of the green shoots that came in, but it was kind of a long process, or maybe longer than people would have liked at the start. So it can take some time sometimes.
Yeah, I wouldn't use that as the greatest example in the world. I was there at the time, and yes, there was certainly. I know in my first 10 games under Warren Gatland, we lost 9 of them. And then when we started to win, they got rid of him. So it's a kind of a reversal in how things are done. Would be a better example of it. So we'll leave that to one side for the time being. Okay, let's move on to the URC, because there's loads of stuff happening in that as well. I will, of course, get to the big derby a little bit later on. But first of all, let's talk about Ulster, who are away to the Bulls. The Bulls have sold the tickets off at practically nothing to try and pack out the stadium in Loftus Versfeld for the fixture and try and create that intimidating environment. And Ulster don't seem to be travelling all that well. So they're under pressure for tonight's game.
Yeah, it's an interesting one for Ulster. I'm sure a lot of people maybe listening might have seen the game against the Stormers last weekend, or maybe seen the fallout where Ulster had a try ruled out in injury time to win that game, a try that should have been given, and that the URC have subsequently admitted should have been given. So like Ulster are kind of on the back foot in that regard. That would have been a key win in terms of securing a top two placing and a home advantage in the knockout stage. So this is a very important game for them. They still have to host Munster in a couple of weeks' time, which is a big game as well in terms of seeding. So they could really do with a win today. They have rested a couple of guys. They've rotated. They still have a strong team out, but Stuart McCluskey, who was very good last week, has been rested, for instance. But Ian Henderson is back. And I'm just interested generally, like the Irish haven't won in South Africa yet, interestingly enough. 3 games, 3 defeats. So, for all the talk about how good the Irish teams are in this league, and they are occupying, 3 of the top 4 spaces, after going down to South Africa after all the hype, they haven't played very well and they haven't got a win yet. So I think just for Irish rugby generally, it's an interesting one to see how Ulster go. Obviously, Leinster are going there, I think, in 2 weeks' time for their 2-test series. So, they might have a better chance. But it has been interesting just to watch the South African teams play the Irish teams down there, and just how it's been a different dynamic to what the games were like up here.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think Ulster are going to be up against it, because the Bulls are moved up to 7th place and they're on a bit of a run. I think they have 4 games on the trot now that they've won, so they're on a bit of a roll. They'll feel confident at home and they'll have a packed stadium behind them. And they do, I don't care what anybody says, it's different rugby down there. It plays differently. The weather is a factor. At times altitude is a factor in different things. So it's different rugby down there, and it's hard being that far away from home. It's kind of like it must be difficult for the players. I've never done what they're doing now, in the sense that you're playing a domestic competition in South Africa. It's only ever been international tests, but you can't help but feel that there's a little bit of a feel of a pre-season tour or something like that about it. It must be very hard for them to switch into pro mode and be totally focused on the game and have the same game prep for the entire week that they would here at home.
Yeah, and it's dropped in at an odd time of the season. It's just before Champions Cup. Ulster will be definitely having one eye on Toulouse next weekend. Likewise, when Leinster go in 2 weeks' time, it'll be sandwiched between, last 16 games, and if Leinster progress, which they probably will, a quarter-final game potentially away to Leicester. So it's a strange time in that regard, even mentally, for the coaches to get the players in tune and switched on for the task at hand. One thing in terms of preparation, I suppose, for this weekend, having that extra week in South Africa to adjust, as you say, to the climate, to altitude and playing at altitude and those things, that should benefit them today. Ulster did at times look a little leggy, because the Stormers were playing a very high-tempo game. They were 14-0 up after 5-10 minutes, so Ulster did take a little time to adjust. But when they did adjust, they probably had the better of the game. So I am expecting a better performance. And one interesting subplot for people to watch is Marcel Coetzee is playing for the Bulls today. Obviously played for Ulster for a number of years, was a great player. asked to go home early from his contract. And there was a little bit of contention, I think, towards the end around that. So that's a nice kind of subplot, him going up against his old team as well.
Absolutely. Okay, Connacht, they're desperate for a win. I mean, they're pretty probably not going to make it to the last eight anyway, but if they don't win today, they definitely won't. But it's not an easy one going away to Connacht. I know they'll have a couple of big names back, but they won't have all of them. And this is a real tough one for Connacht, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, Treviso have some of their, you know, players back who played for Italy in that great win over Wales recently. And I do think it's an important one for Connacht, because it's funny, like earlier in the season, I felt like we were having so many positive conversations about them. But then when you look at the results, some of the results have been really poor. Obviously, like Leinster last weekend, they had a man sent off in the first minute. But before that, you know, getting absolutely hammered by Edinburgh. They lost at home to Dragons earlier in the year. They got hammered at home by Glasgow earlier in the year. Even their Champions Cup group, they got out of the pool, but they only won one of those games. And, you know, obviously throwing that Leicester game away when they had that huge lead. You know, I feel like this is a massive game to get some positivity back ahead of those two legs. Like, they're not going to make the top eight. They still have to go to South Africa for two games. It'll be very difficult. They'd have to basically win both of those down in South Africa as well, which is a big ask. But to even finish the season with a bit of positivity, you know, they have some signings from Leinster ahead of next year to bolster that squad. It'll be a very big ask to go toe-to-toe with Leinster in Europe. But to even get, you know, back some momentum that they've kind of lost over the last few weeks, I think is massive. They do have a strong team out, but it's going to be very tough for them today.
Okay, the big one tonight, Munster taking on Leinster down in Thomond Park, 7 o'clock kickoff. I have to say, I am so excited about this one. It has more of a feel of that proper derby about it. I think it's the timing of it, the fact that we've got Europe coming, so both sides will be putting out strong teams and internationals are back. And, you know, I feel there's a lot going on in Munster at the moment, with coaches going, players leaving, all sorts of different things. It's sort of like they need to send out a strong message. So there's pressure on them, there's no doubt about it. But Leinster are the form side at the moment, so it's all teeing up nicely to be a cracker down in Thomond.
Yeah, as you say, the teams are both quite strong. Leinster, you know, on paper, do have the stronger team, especially with that bench. There's some formidable guys on that bench. But for me, it's a very big game for Munster, just in terms of even just the league seedings and positioning. They very quietly had a very poor couple of weeks. To lose both of those games down in South Africa, when they had pretty strong teams, obviously missing their internationals, but strong teams out, you know, that was very damaging for their league standings. Like, they have a very tough run in. They have to play Leinster today. They have to go to Ulster and go to the Aviva to play Leinster again. They only have four matches left. So if they lose tonight, they could very well start slipping down the table. They won't end up missing the playoffs. But if they're not careful, they could end up with an away quarterfinal even. And when they're looking for silverware, finally, it's these little mini slip-ups. Like, it's easy to focus on the end-of-season games when they've lost away to Leinster. But the reason they've had to play Leinster away in so many semi-finals is because they slipped up so often in the league in games they should be winning. In Van Grant's first three seasons, they finished behind Glasgow twice and Edinburgh once, which meant they had to go away in the semi-final. Like, so you could avoid Leinster in the RDS if you had taken care of business in the league, which Munster have failed to do in the last couple of weeks. So it's a massive game for me, for them tonight. Leinster have a good lead at the top of the table. They obviously will want to win the game. But if they lost, they're still in a very strong position. For me, this is vital for Munster. The season could start going very pear-shaped very quickly if they lose tonight, with Exeter a very tough back-to-back to come. And if they want to finish on a high for Van Gran and even end that trophy drought, they really need to start winning again.
What do you think about it? I mean, the front five for Leinster may be the least experienced of the entire team, because the back row is massive experience and it's a really strong back line as well. But then again, for Munster, there's not any, you know, their front five are probably on a par with the front five that Leinster have picked. So, you know, the forward battle is always crucial in these encounters between the two sides. But the back line for Leinster just kind of edged a bit at the moment.
Yeah, as you say, like the one area when you look at that Leinster team sheet where you're maybe like, oh, they're not as strong as they usually are, is that tight five. But I don't think the Munster tight five, as you say, is the one that'll exploit that. Like, Locke and Scannell and Stephen Archer wouldn't be striking massive fear into, you know, Ed Byrne, James Tracy and Michael Alatoa, I don't think. And as you say,
and
Leinster
with the bench
full
that you have of Furlong, Healy,
yeah,
and Sheehan,
yeah,
there,
exactly,
to bring on.
Sheehan, who's like really in the form of his life at the moment with the ball in hand. Like, if he comes on the second half as well, he could do some serious damage. You know, and the Leinster back row is the Ireland back row as well. So it's a very formidable team. Like, the back line is full strength, bar Johnny Sexton. So I find it very, and like Munster, you have to think of who Munster are missing, like Conway, Keith Earls, Simon Zeebo, Tyke Byrne. You know, there's some key guys, you know, Jack O'Donoghue, another one, you know, Dave Kilcoyne, another one. That's some massive guys missing from Munster. So they're 7-point underdogs at Thomond Park, which says it all. And it's not even sold out as well, which I think is another indication of where things might be at the moment. As you say, there's a lot of flux at the moment. They don't even know who their head coach is, although all indications appear to be that it'll likely be Graham Rowntree promoted to head coach, which is an interesting one. So, yeah, it's very much in flux. Leinster, I think, do have the edge in a number of areas today. I think they will win, but... yeah, Munster need a big performance.
On a wider chat then about Munster, the announcements of, you know, Delande and Clayton, all of the different people moving around and coaches, and there seems to be a little bit and some signings as well, and it's not all negative, but there just seems to be a lot of uncertainty around Munster at the moment, and they're very much in flux.
Big time. Like the Diallande one, I suppose, is more understandable. Like, he was like a 2-year deal for one of the best centers in the world. Always going to be hard to keep him when Japan comes sniffing around and probably, you know, doubles his salary. They've held on to Orji Snyman now. I know he's only played, what, 2 appearances in 2 seasons, but if he can get fit, he could potentially be a game changer. But yeah, for me, the big thing is the coach and the coaching staff. Like, if Graham Rowntree is a well-regarded forwards coach, but I don't think he would be the really sexy, exciting appointment that maybe a lot of Munster fans were hoping for. Is he the head coach that will bring in, you know, this trophy-winning era? You know, I kind of think back to when Leinster hired Michael Checker or Joe Schmidt. These guys weren't household names. You know, these were guys, weren't people that Leinster fans immediately were like, oh, this is going to take us to the promised land. But Leinster went, did their research, thought outside the box, and ended up getting 2 unbelievable coaches. I feel like Munster, just by, you know, going with Rowntree, and obviously his staff will be crucial as well. I just wonder, are they missing a trick there? Is there something more creative they could have done? I know, like, Ronan O'Gara didn't want to go. He would have been the obvious choice, but I don't know. I was hoping, from a Munster perspective, there would have been a bigger splash. Now, obviously, the announcement hasn't been made yet, but as I said, a lot of indications are that he is the favourite. So that'll be a very interesting one. And as I said, his staff will be crucial because, as you say, a lot of flux going on at the moment. It does feel like the end of an era with Van Graan leaving. He's been there 5 years. But I'm not sure if they're well positioned now to kick on and have a really exciting new era. You know, they have some good young players, but I would have liked to have seen a little more maybe attack-minded creativity in terms of who they pick for a head coach.
Yeah, indeed. And probably a bit better forward planning, it would be another way that I'd put it, that, you know, this isn't a kind of a thing that's flung on them at the last minute, which it seems to always be. That seems to be the problem. It was with the last appointment, it felt that way, and it is again with this one, it feels that way. I'm not saying that there's a multitude of amazing coaches waiting in the wings to come in, but it feels that way. I'm not saying that there's a multitude of amazing coaches waiting in the wings to come in. But there was a time when, you know, you would be beating coaches away to take that Munster job because it was one of the juiciest gigs in town. And that doesn't seem to be the case anymore.
Yeah, and like I have a little bit of sympathy in the sense that, you know, say Leinster went and got Stuart Lancaster, who's turned into a master's trainer. Like, I honestly think, like, almost any club in Europe could have got him at that stage, given his stock after the World Cup. It's not as if he was inundated with a lot of offers. Again, Leinster thought outside the box. Like, I remember seeing Stuart Lancaster, you know, being announced, and I thought, this is a very unusual move, and it's been an absolute masterstroke. They tried to do that with Stephen Larkham. That was the sexy, attack-minded hire that people were crying out for. But to call a spade, he's leaving at the end of the year. Has there been much attacking progression? Maybe a little bit, but certainly when they've gotten to the key knockout games, it doesn't appear to have translated maybe what they've done in some of the maybe URC games. So at the end of this coaching staff's tenure, I don't know if there's been a huge amount of improvement. So as you say, it used to be a job everybody wanted. Like, the thought of Ronan O'Gara happily turning it down would have seemed unfathomable at times, but now you can kind of understand where he's coming from, because he's in a position with a rich French club with a lot of resources, and he's coming back where he'll be playing second fiddle to Leinster unless something drastically changes. So it's a very interesting period for Munster. That's why this hire and the staff is going to be so important.
Golf Now, delighted to be joined on the line by Deirdre Smith. Morning, Deirdre, how are you?
Morning, Reggie. Good, yeah, and you?
Great, not a bother. Looking forward to loads of golf coming up. It's getting to that time of year. It's exciting, but there's still plenty going on at the moment. We'll start with the LPGA. Talk to me about Leona and Stephanie. I think they're in Palm Springs, aren't they, in Mission Hills. Leona decent enough. What has she been down around 30th place or something like that?
Yeah, she's lying there about around 30th. Yeah, she's 3 under, 9 under leading. So, you know, she's right in the mix. I know she's gone out in price, which I'm a bit surprised about, but because, you know, at weekends, the majors sort of, that's when they really start. You know, they kind of tuck away the pins. They make the courses a bit more difficult at the weekends. And if she can put in a nice solid under par round today, she's really in the mix. I think, you know, she certainly won't feel she's out of it. She's only 6 shots back. I know there's a lot of good players ahead of her, but, you know, this is where she wants to be now. She's won her LPGA tour, and now really she wants to make an impression in the majors. And I think a top five would be a really good result for her. I'm delighted to see that Stephanie made the cut too. She built on a great performance last weekend where she was 10th, and hopefully she's kind of come out of under the shadow of Leona this year, and she'll just go on and forge her own kind of path this year herself. So I'm delighted she's made the cut. It's a big deal to make a cut in a major, and she has been out of the mix, so I'm delighted to see that as well. So look, major is over 4 days. The course will get tougher, so I certainly don't think Leona's out of it.
Good, yeah. I'm sure you're bang on there. But I mean, as you said, it's really only starting to get into the swing of things at the moment. So it's all starting now. So plenty of time to get that rhythm going. We'd probably move on to the men then. I just see Rory didn't quite make it this week. Disappointing for. But I said it to Ken. I'm kind of a little bit optimistic that there's less pressure on Rory McIlroy this year going into the Masters than all the other years, getting that Grand Slam and all of the pressure that comes along with it. I don't know, others are saying to me, look, his form just isn't there at the minute. You can't expect him to do anything. But can he spring a bit of a surprise in the Masters?
You know, golf's a funny game, Reggie, and you're right. You know, I think Rory's going to win the Masters when he's least expected to win it, to be honest. Because there's just been so much pressure on him. And, you know, the best thing that could happen to Rory this week is if Tiger played. Because if Tiger plays, he will take all of the media attention, and it'll take all the focus. I'm sure all the players are hoping he plays, because it'll take an awful lot of pressure off, you know, the likes of Rory and Scheffler and Ram and these guys who are really, you know, wanting to win the Masters. But look, it's difficult to go to a tournament low on confidence, and I think that he desperately needed to find some kind of on-course form this week. It didn't happen. But then, you know, with golf is funny. When you least expect to win and you're going with no expectations, sometimes something can happen. And if he can handle the whole mental pressure, if he's in the mix on Sunday and he can handle the whole mental pressure of being in a really elite group of Saracen and Hogan and Player and Nicklaus and Woods of winning the Grand Slam, fine, but it's a big ask, I think, with his present form.
Yeah.
And we haven't even seen it up to this. You know, we haven't even seen it in the last 6 or 8 weeks either, you know, in his tournament. So, but look, golf's a funny game, and sometimes it can happen. And I do believe that when the less pressure there's on Rory, the more chance he has of winning it. And it could be this week, but I think it'll be a few years yet.
Yeah, fair
that's
enough.
My own prediction.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And you're talking about lack of pressure. I mean, obviously, we're all over Shane Lowry here, and we love him because of the character that he is, but full of admiration as well for Seamus Power. And, like, he'll just be elated to be in it. So can someone like him, and you often see with the amateurs, you know the way when you're watching the Masters and there's these incredible scores coming in and someone's running completely from the back of the field that you didn't think could have any chance. Seamus Power, does he fall into the category of maybe just being an unknown to the big names in that sense and never expected to win the Masters? Could he pull out a surprise because he's been playing brilliant golf lately?
Yeah, look, I think your analysis is spot on, Reggie. Absolutely. He's nothing to lose. He's playing with supreme confidence. He's a great putter. You know, he's gone in under the radar. Nobody knows who Seamus Power is. He'll just plod along, and he'll make par after par after par, and he'll pick up his birdie here and there. And so long as he can avoid the big number, which can happen at the Masters because of Augusta, and you know, there's just such a, you know, every shot is just so important, yeah. And every shot is a potential disaster.
One hole can destroy a card basically, yeah. In a weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. But he has nothing to lose, and he has a strong mind. He's, you know, he's a really hard worker. He's very resilient. He had a magnificent performance in the HSBC match play last week. I mean, you know, beyond all our wildest dreams. And I would think you're right. I think he's worse than each way bet. He has nothing to lose, and he's, yeah, playing with supreme confidence. And I think your analysis is spot on. And I do think, too, you mentioned Lowry earlier. He is playing really good golf, and, you know, he's interested in the majors too. That's where he wants to be, and he's a big name player, and he has major pedigree, as we saw in Portrush, under the utmost of pressure on his home turf, and he'll just relish this week now. So, you know, to be honest, if I was putting on an each way bet, I'd probably back Power and Lowry before I'd put it on McIlroy.
Yeah, that makes sense to me as well. And then finally, Lauren Walsh at the Augusta National Women's Amateur.
Yeah, fantastic event. You know, it's only 3 years. This is only the third year of it being played. Obviously, Leona never got a chance to play it, or Stephanie, they had turned pro before this event came into being. So, pity she missed the cut by one, which I'm sure she can look back over the 36 holes and pick out maybe four or five shots where she could have been better. But then again, everybody can do that. When you come in, you can always say, I left a few shots on the course. She'd be bitterly disappointed. She only missed the cut by one to actually play in the final round in Augusta today, in Augusta National today. The first two rounds were played over the other course. So, Mahaffey played there in 2019. But look, I just think it's great to see these players, Lauren Walsh, Mahaffey. They're all following in the footsteps of Leona, and they're all, lifting the flying the flag for Ireland. So, marvellous platform, marvellous opportunity for elite amateurs. Pity she didn't miss the cut, but it's great to be there at the same time.
Thanks for listening to Dublin Stock and Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken, and Reggie. Have a good weekend.